The laws of nature do a phenomenal amount of this development that's mentioned in the 6 days. Otherwise, you'd have creation every other sentence. But you don't. Creation in the first sentence, when the creation of the universe, with the laws of nature. Nature, creation for the nefesh of animals, creation for the neshama of humans. And those are the creations. And the laws of nature are able to guide. With it, you know, God steps in and redirects nature. But you don't have to have major changes in the universe because it's set up already. So the Torah wants you to be amazed by this flow of order, starting from a plasma, chaotic plasma, and ending up with a symphony of life, and day by day going to higher and higher levels, out of order, out of disorder. And, I mean, it's pure thermodynamics, but stated in terminology of 3,000 years ago and interpreted 800 years ago by Nachmanides, who says this, he says it's not my idea, he says, I got it from my teachers, who got it from their teachers going back. So we have order arising out of disorder. And then the days are numbered. The days are numbered. There are evening and morning. And it's the discontinuity in the way the days are numbered that gives the answer that has been used for understanding the age of the universe. Each day is numbered. There is evening and morning, day one. But the second day doesn't say there is evening and morning, day two, does it? It says there is evening and morning, a second day. Evening and morning, a third day, fourth day, fifth day, the sixth day. But for the first day, the text does not say v'hi erev yivoker yom rishon. There's evening and morning, a first day. It says v'hi erev yivoker yom echad. There's evening and morning, day one. Now, there are many English translations that make the mistake of writing a first day. And that's clear why. Because editors want consistency. And human editors want things to be nice and consistent. So they want to throw out the cosmic message to make people feel comfortable. But the text carries a cosmic message. There's evening and morning, day one, because there is a qualitative difference, as Nachmanides brings down, between one and first. One is absolute. First is comparative. Now, Rashi brings the philosophical meaning for day one, the day of the one. Nachmanides brings the physical meaning of day one. Day one, he tells us, comes to teach us that time was created, that there was a creation to time. It's a phenomenal insight that time was created. I mean, I can understand stuff, matter, even space, but time? How do you create time? You can't grab time. You don't even see it. You can see distance and space. You can see stuff and matter. You can feel energy. You can see light energy. Okay, so they have a creation there. But time should be created. To understand the esoteric insight from thousands of years ago by having the Torah say there is evening, morning, day one, that taught us exactly what Einstein taught us in the laws of relativity. That in fact there was a creation, not just to stuff and space, but to time itself. And that's been recorded by commentators through the ages. And it comes from the statements, in the beginning, and v'hi erev yivoker, yom echad, day one. And then the interpretation of the text goes further and learns something else from the fact that the Bible says day one. Because one is absolute and not comparative, the text tells us the view of the Bible for those first 6 days. See, we look at the universe and we say, how old is the universe? Oh, looking back in time, the universe is about 15,000 million years old, about 15 billion years old. That's our view of time. But what's the Bible's view of time? How does it see time? Maybe it sees time differently. Oh, maybe. Would it make any difference? Yeah, it makes a big difference. The same Albert Einstein that taught us that time was part of the creation, that Big Bang cosmology brings not just space and matter into being, but time, space, and matter, teaches us that time is part of the nitty-gritty, that time is a dimension, that time is affected by your view of time, that how you see time depends upon where you're viewing it and how you're viewing it, that a minute on the moon goes faster than a minute on the earth. that a minute on the sun goes slower, that a time on the sun is actually stretched out. So if you could put a clock on the sun, it would tick more slowly. If you could live on the sun, your heart would beat more slowly. It's a small difference, but it's measurable and measured. It's one of the proofs that the theory of relativity by Albert Einstein is, in fact, the law of relativity. If you could ripen oranges on the sun, they would take longer to ripen. Why? Because time just goes more slowly. Would you feel it going more slowly? No, because your biology would be part of the system. Because wherever you are, your biology is in sync with the local time. That's why you buy a watch, because it tells you time. But if you can look from one system to another, you would see time going very differently. Because depending upon gravity and velocity, those are biological changes, the expansion of the universe, the perception of time. Those changes will have you perceive time in a way that is very different. Now, I give an example of biological time that is only peripherally relevant to how I develop the argument in a moment, but just to give you an example of exactly what I'm talking about. It happened at our house several years ago when my oldest daughter, Hadass, was then 11. As I say, she also is much obviously older now. When Hadass was 11, we were discussing around the dinner table the age of the universe and the idea of time being different and how you could have dinosaurs and how you can have billions of years and thousands of years being at the same time. So we conjured up, we made believe a make-believe planet, totally make-believe, but such places happen to exist in the universe today, a planet where time is so stretched out that while we live out 2 years on Earth, only 3 minutes will go by on the planet. Now, those places actually exist. They're observed, okay? It'd be hard to live there, the conditions. You couldn't get to them either, but in mental experiments, you can do it. So 2 years are going to go by on Earth, 3 minutes go by on the planet. So Hadassi, aged 11, says to me, Abba, Daddy, send me to the planet. I'll spend 3 minutes there. I'll do 2 years worth of homework. I come back home, no homework for 2 years. But Hadassi wasn't quite right, huh? She was 11 when she left, and all her friends were 11. She spends 3 minutes on the planet and comes home. If the travel time takes no time, she's there, and then she's here, and then she's back. Any thoughts about how old Hadass was when she got back? She's 11.
11 years, 3 days.
11 years and 3 days. And all her friends are how old?
13.
11 years and 3 minutes, yeah. And all her friends are now 13. Because she lived out 3 minutes while we lived out 2 years. Her friends aged from 11 years to 13 years while she stayed 11 years and 3 minutes. Hadassi would have gotten 3 minutes worth of homework while we would have lived out 2 years. Had Hadass looked down on the earth from there, her perception of our time would be that everybody's moving very fast. You could barely see it because we're moving so fast. Because in her 1 or 4 minutes, thousands of minutes would go by, right? Whereas if we looked up at Hadassi, Hadassi would be moving very slowly. Because in one of our years, she would only live out a few minutes. And she would do a few minutes worth of work. Who's correct? Is it 3 years? Both. They both happen in the same time. That's the legacy of Albert Einstein. It happens to be that there are billions, literally billions of locations in the universe where if you could put a clock at that location, it would tick so slowly that from our perspective, 15 billion years, if we could last that long, 15 billion years would go by, why it would take out 6 days. And those are the data. No one disputes them. The difficulty is these spaces are not necessarily relevant to the flow of time as the Bible sees it. The Talmud goes ahead in Hagiga and gets to this word day for day one, based on the first time that the duration of a day is discussed, and says, V'hi erev yivoker yom echad, Genesis chapter 1, verse 5, there's evening and morning, day 1, and says, day 1, the duration of a day, 24 hours. The Talmud tells me that. Rashi, in his commentary on the Talmud, agrees, says, day, kuf dalad sha'ot, yom, day, 24 hours. Nachmanides on the sentence in Genesis chapter 1, verse 3, I believe it is, v'hi or, and there was light. Nachmanides, the Kabbalist, says not just that not only that the days are 24 hours each, but the duration of the days, the 6 days of Genesis, is no more than the 6 days of our work week, made up of hours and minutes. So there are no ancient commentaries that say anything other than the fact that the days are 24 hours each. The Talmud says it, and it says it on day one. See, supposing it had said, V'hi ed v'voka yom ha-shishi, on the sixth day, well, then you could say, well, all the other days was different. In other words, if the Talmud had used as the example, there's evening and morning the sixth day, we could say, well, the first 5 days were different. Okay? But the Talmud says it on day one. There's evening and morning day one. To let you know right from the beginning, there's no monkey business going on here. The days are 24 hours each. There's no justification for any other comment. There are no ancient commentators that say anything other than that. Maimonides in the Guide for the Perplexed redefines, I count to 42 words, maybe there are more, but I count to 42 words in which Maimonides expands the meaning of these 42 words. One word he does not expand the meaning on is day. For Maimonides, he has no problem with day. All of the ancient commentators hold that the days are 24 hours each. But the Kabbalah, Nachmanides, where he says the days are 24 hours each as the days of our work week, expands the statement in Genesis and then later in the book of Exodus on Ki Tikneh Evid Ivri, and then in Leviticus on Shabbat LaHashem. He says that although the days are 24 hours each, they contain kol hayamot olam. They contain all the ages and all the secrets of the world. Nachmanides says the days are 24 hours each, but they contain all the ages and all the secrets of the world. And it took an Albert Einstein to figure out just how they could contain all the ages and all the secrets of the world. Einstein's laws of relativity were, let's say, presaged, we'll say, were predicted or were anticipated in Nachmanides' description of the early universe. There's only one Kabbalistic description of the physical universe, and here it is. Nachmanides brings it down very simply. He says, in the beginning, before the beginning, we don't know what there is. We can't tell what predates the universe. There's a medrash on that. The first word of the Bible in modern Hebrew is a bait, right? Bereshit, bait. And bait is written like a backward C. In other words, closed in all directions and only open in the forward directions. Hence, we can only know what predates, what comes after. We can never know what predates the Bible. And the hint is that the first letter of the Bible is closed in all directions and only open in the forward direction. Okay, so Nachmanides says we cannot know what predates the universe, but there was nothing that we can understand. And then suddenly, the entire creation was in a minuscule speck. He gives a dimension for the speck, something similar to the size of a grain of mustard. Okay? It's real tiny. And he says, that's the only physical creation. He says it three times in his commentary. There was one physical creation. There was no other physical creation. All other creations were spiritual. The nefesh is a spiritual creation, the soul of animal life. The neshama, the soul of human life, is a spiritual creation. There's only one physical creation. And that creation was in tiny speck. And it wasn't a speck in a vacuum, because a vacuum is space. The speck is all there was. Anything else was God. And in that speck was all the raw material that would be used for making the entire everything else. And he says, we don't have a word for that in Hebrew. And he describes the substance. He says it was, Luzzatto brings it down also in his Kabbalistic works. The substance was dak ma'od, very thin, ein bo mamash. No substance to it. It was a substance without substance. And as this speck expanded out, stretching out, this substance so thin that it has no essence turned into matter as we know it. And he writes, Mishia Yeshit Fosposman, from the moment that you have matter forming from this substanceless substance, time grabs a hold. Yitfospo, tofes. Grabs a hold. Not begins. Time is created at the beginning. Bereshit bara Elokim et hashamayim v'et ha'aretz. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. That's the creation. But time grabs a hold. The biblical clock starts when matter condenses, congeals, coalesces out of this substance so thin it has no essence. We only know one thing in the universe. One substanceless substance. A substance without substance. That can change into matter. And that's energy. Einstein's famous equation, right? E equals mc squared tells us the relationship. That energy can change into matter. And once it changes into matter, time grabs a hold. And that's a phenomenal statement. Because I don't know if he knew the laws of relativity, but we know them now. That energy, like these light beams that you see, or radio waves, or gamma rays, or x-rays, all travel by definition at the speed of light, 300 million meters a second. And at the speed of light, time does not pass. The universe was aging, but time only grabs a hold when matter is present. This moment of time before the clock begins for the Bible lasted about 1/100,000th of a second, a minuscule time. But in that time, the universe expanded from a tiny speck to about the size of the solar system. And from that moment on, we have matter, and time flows forward from that moment, and the clock begins here.